Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:30 in the morning. You can join in on the program. Tweet us at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Go to www.illegalcurve.com and join the live chat that is taking place over there. And of course, if you missed any of this program, it'll be available for download on iTunes. Subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Get the show sent directly to your iPod each and every weekend when it's posted.
What do you think of the BlackBerry playbook?
I don't see the point of the
iPad.
Richard has an iPad. Yeah. He doesn't use it.
It's useless.
Yeah, he does.
No, he doesn't.
What do you mean it's useless? I'll take it.
Who needs an iPad?
My laptop.
Well, when you've got a MacBook, a BlackBerry, a Mercedes-Benz, a Lamborghini, you know.
I mean, my laptop's the same size as a iPad or a Playbook, so I don't really see the point of it, but whatever.
Do you wear a watch, Drew?
I don't wear a watch.
Do you, Yearn?
Do I yearn?
Yeah.
No, I haven't yearned in a while.
Drew learns.
I learn. I don't yearn. Anyways, let's talk about the Vancouver Nashville series now that we've had that conversation for some strange reason. Vancouver-Nashville, 1-0 Vancouver. They won game one in Vancouver. Game two goes tonight. It'll be available here on Sports Radio 1290. Pre-game show at 7 o'clock. Puck drop at 8 o'clock. That first game was as dull as could be.
It was awful.
It was awful. It was just a boring hockey game. I mean, and
Nashville didn't come to play, Drew.
What's that?
Nashville
did not come to play, and we're going to talk about that with Joshua Cooper coming up at 11 o'clock this morning. But and you can understand why there was a little bit of a letdown after the excitement surrounding the Vancouver-Chicago series. Do you think that this series is going to pick up?
Yeah, I do.
Is this going to be a good series? Is this going to be a long series?
I have Vancouver in six, but I don't think any longer than that.
I took Vancouver in 6-2, but Richie, how Nashville's the type of team in the Western Conference, and the reason why they're successful is because they play basically in an impeccable system that really favors their goaltending and their defense, right?
That's because they don't have any upfront talent.
I don't think that they're going to be able to do this against Vancouver more than maybe once, maybe twice in six games. I think that's why what Richie's thinking was maybe they can do that. They can win two out of six games. But if they have any chance of actually taking a game in Vancouver and maybe going up, 2-1 or whatever, they're going to have to get an offensive outburst from someone, whether it's Sergei Kostitsyn or Mike Fisher. I mean, that's what I was talking about last series. They managed to frustrate Anaheim, but you can't expect Jared Smithson and Jordan Tutu to get your game-winning goals when those guys are grinders, really.
Right.
You just can't. Pekka Rinne, I'm sorry, in that game, Vancouver definitely dominated them. What was the shot? They were about 3-2, right?
Oh,
30-20 or something?
Close.
But Pekka Rinne, he always plays great. He didn't steal the series by any means against the Ducks. In fact, he had a couple of terrible games. But in that game, was a 1-0. He kept them in there.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be the same old story with Nashville. And if there's any series of the eight remaining teams and four remaining series, this one might be the most lopsided, I would say.
Is this the best matchup Vancouver could have hoped for in the second round?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the case. You know, Drew, you're looking at the top most offensive line on that team in Nashville. You're looking at Fisher and Hornquist and Kostitsyn, and I realize Fisher had a breakaway in the last 10 minutes of the game, a 1-0 game, and he could have scored. That's not a line. You know, it's a line that has some offensive talent, and Hornquist probably best goal scorer. Kostitsyn probably the most offensively skilled. But Fisher is in and out in terms of an offensive player, and if that's what you're counting on, then like Legwand and Erat and those guys, what the biggest worry to me if I'm a Nashville fan is that I have arguably as good of defense as you're going to have in the National Hockey League, especially top two pairing, and I have a great goalie. And if I have both of those things and the matchup is still tilted in Vancouver's favor because Vancouver has been so dominant offensively, where do you reconcile the rest of the problems? You know, what do you do about your offense against Vancouver's pretty good defense and pretty good goaltending? What do you do about that? What do you do about the fact that you have an awful power play?
Why do they have an awful power play?
When you don't have offensively skilled players, Drew, it's hard to have a good power play. When you don't have the creative guys down low, it's hard to have a good power play. What this is the key to me in this series is it's going to be a matchup game, and I feel like later on in the series, now again, Nashville and Vancouver aren't that familiar with each other. I feel like matchups will develop.
Nashville did dominate Vancouver in the regular season. Yeah, granted, it's the regular season, right. But, you know.
What I think will happen is I think Weber and Suter, for the most part, will be a matchup against the Sedins. I don't see the Sedins being that effective against a combination that's skillful in terms of skating and power, because the Sedins aren't very physical and they seem to back down from confrontation.
And Suter and Weber did a pretty good job against the Getzlaff, Perry, and Ryan line last series.
Somewhat. I mean, as hard as they are to cover. I think the key to this series is Ryan Kessler's line against Kevin Klein and Jonathan Bloom. Kevin Klein and Jonathan Bloom being the Nashville second defensive pair.
And you think that Vancouver can exploit them?
Yes. I think that's the biggest key to the series for me.
Because really the depth lines here, you know, the third and fourth lines, there's not a huge discrepancy in the depth lines here. I mean, we've talked about Vancouver's injuries and how it's affecting their depth. But, you know, it seems like that, you know, there's probably more of an even... but when you get to the third and fourth lines, there's not a huge discrepancy. The problem is Nashville's top line is probably... Are they the second line on every other playoff team?
Yeah, the team is greater than the sum of its parts. I mean, that's for sure. But you look at the special teams advantage, and Vancouver, the best power play in the National Hockey League, and a top penalty kill. And Nashville's power play is terrible, and Nashville's penalty kill is good, but, you know, it's offset. There's just so many, like, what do you do about intangibles? I mean... That's kind of the way hockey perspective breaks it, the way we break it down on the site. Overall, I just don't see Nashville. I see Nashville's biggest advantage being defense and goaltending, and that's offset by Vancouver's offense. And the rest of the categories, Vancouver dominates for the most part. And Vancouver is a little bit top heavy, especially without the Malhotra, you know, at the third line center there. And I think if Weber, and this is how Nashville wins, okay? I don't think they're going to win, obviously. This is how Nashville wins. If Suter and Weber can shut down the Sedins, really shut them down, and Kessler, for whatever reason, his line can't get on the board,
then they have a chance
against the Klein and Bloom line. I think they have a chance.
And I think on that topic, I think Shea Weber and Ryan Suter are that good defensively that they definitely can, and I think they will shut down the Sedins for maybe four of those six games. But then when it opens up, they might. Get in on the action. The Sedins haven't been very good at all these playoffs. But Richie, I think for those hockey fans, especially, you know, those hockey fans that are Canucks fans or that just like to watch all the hockey they can watch. For those hockey fans that plan on watching, you know, the majority of the Vancouver Canucks Nashville Predators games, I think there's two things that you should watch in the series from each side. I think you should watch how good Mason Raymond has become.
Well, he's playing beside Kessler right now.
Beside Kessler, how good he's become, how he uses his speed, mm-hmm. and how he's become a really good offensive player. And I really think that people should watch Shea Weber and Ryan Suter because as a pair, those guys are, I think they're better, they're actually better than even Pronger and Niedermayer.
They are.
Watch how those guys position themselves.
Talking about Pronger and Niedermayer when they played on Anaheim.
When they played on Anaheim, yeah. Just watch. If it's a boring game and the score isn't very mm-hmm. very high, watch those two things. Mainly those three players. And for that matter Kessler, because Kessler plays in all situations and he's really become one of the most intelligent players and he should win the Selke.
It's interesting how they're flanking him with Burrows and Mason Raymond, both terrific skaters, trying to get speed on his wings.
Yeah.
One thing to take into account though, guys, and I think Vancouver has the edge in everything. The first game they dominate for the most part, but a Mike Fisher breakaway and a Shea Weber empty net.
You're right. It's an anybody. Let me ask one quick question before we go to break and recap our predictions on this one. Can Rafi Torres become a useful player in this series?
If he wants to.
Do you think that his craziness last series was just a function of who he played against?
Yeah, somewhat, Drew. I think it's a factor. If he loses confidence in the offensive ability very quickly, I think he reverts to, you know, desperate style of play. I think if he had more confidence in himself, he wouldn't play that way.
So, I think if he was wise, he would not self-destruct, and he would be useful by not being in the penalty box.
And, you know, people say, how are you, you know, psychoanalyzing Rafi Torres from afar? I have that from a front office member of a team he played on, that he lacks from, he goes in big droughts and lacks from confidence issues in his game.
Do you have sources?
Maybe.
You have sources we don't know about?
I don't like dropping sources, per se, but I'm just passing that along.
Is it the Balkan?
Isn't Dave Manuk the Balkan?
I think so.
From Legal Curve?
Yeah, I thought he was. Anyways, predictions, let's run them down real quick. They're available. Of course, you can check back on www.illegalcurve.com. Ezzy, Canucks in 7.
Yeah, that was my prediction, Drew.
Richard, Canucks in 6.
Yeah, Drew, I think that if I think Nashville probably wins game 3 at home.
Yeah.
And I think Rene has the ability to steal a series. And they play such a tight style of play that I think one game will be determined on bounces. But
would you guys allow me to change that? I can't, obviously. The series has started. Now that I think about it, I probably should have gone Vancouver in 6.
Okay. Well,
you're probably going to be right about that one.
Too bad, no. I have Canucks in 5. Remus has Canucks in 5. And Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com has Canucks in 6. Let's go to break. When we come back, the final series, it's the Sharks Red Wings. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
You know Drew's right. You know Drew's right.
Nobody wants to hear you singing. Absolutely nobody wants to hear you singing. 10:48 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and Ezra's Karaoke Hour.
Drew, I'd like to, you know, if I can, if I may, right now.
I wish you wouldn't.
You know, for everyone out there who, you know, is maybe a new listener to the show, me, Drew, Richard, and Remus have known each other for many years. We're all friends, so I think...
Before you start this, Ezzy, can we play the clip of last week when you ripped Drew?
Okay, play it, Michael. Is it set up? Well, that was awkward.
Chance.
It's a good thing Tim's right. Playing good music because we've got a horrible host.
Wow.
A lot of hate
that
there,
was
Ezzy.
Mean.
All of a sudden, you're going to be sensitive?
Well, that was a little bit harsher than normal.
It was a joke. Before we go to...
I don't know. Are you crying?
That was a little bit harsher
than normal.
Yeah, I agree.
Just to clear the air, Drew, we've been friends for a very long time. And
not
for
since
those,
last week.
For those people who don't know, we constantly joke around. And I do... Yeah, play it. I think it'll actually help my apology.
No, just keep going with it.
I apologize because a lot of people off air, honestly, a lot of people off air thought that I was being serious and we had some type of beef, but it was completely joking. We give each other a hard time. We sometimes, you know, throw each other under the bus a little bit, but you know, we joke around and we kid each other and we're hard on each other for the purpose of the show, just to keep each other on point and to have a good time. So I do apologize if anybody thought that I was mean to Drew, and I apologize to you, Drew, specifically. And, you know, people can't tell because this is radio, but we are hugging right now. And you want a hug?
No, I don't really want a hug.
Your thoughts on the apology?
I'm speechless. I know it's radio, but I think I'm speechless is what it's really boiled down to. That was very nice. That was heartfelt.
There was a royal wedding Thursday morning. That was a royal apology.
That's only one royal wedding. Yeah, that's Drew's royal wedding, April 22nd in Kentucky, 2012. It's going to be Prince Drew Mindell walking down the aisle with Princess Laura Piles of Kentucky. It's going to be 3 hours of millions of people watching.
The Duchess of Kentucky and the Prince of Winnipeg.
Prince Drew. That's his new name.
Are we ready now? Are we good? You guys had your fun for the
I'm
week.
I'm sorry. That was the best 15 seconds I've ever heard on radio.
Okay. Can we talk about San Jose, Detroit now? San Jose took a 1-0.
Forget the Duchess. Drew's the old Duchess.
Okay.
Oh, man.
San Jose took a 1-0 lead on Detroit last night in the first game of that series. I think of all the series in the second round, that's the series I'm looking most forward to. I think those are just two... those are probably the two... If Vancouver's the best team left in the playoffs, I think San Jose-Detroit might be number 2 and number 3 left in the playoffs.
When you talk about the Vancouver-Nashville series being a little bit lopsided in one favor, which is, I think, is the only series out of the four that's like that. You're right, Drew. This is the closest series to call.
Philly and Boston also.
Right. Philly and Boston. But I think this is even more close based on last year and last year's series in San Jose beating Detroit. I'm picking Detroit for the simple reason that I think that now that Zetterberg's back and healthy, I think Detroit has Vancouver, has had Vancouver in their sights the entire year. And the thing that concerns me, Drew, about San Jose is that they're not getting... It's not that they're not getting any production from the big line.
But that's not the big line anymore.
That's not... No, but you're right. But it's one of two lines that they depend on. And in my opinion, there's no way that those guys can play like they did in the first round against LA. I really... can you tell me where Danny Heatley... Danny Heatley is one of the best scorers in the world. He's an Olympian. He's how many 50-goal, 100-point seasons does that guy have? You can barely tell he's on the ice half the time. I don't think that those guys... I realize Pavelski, Klo, Setoguchi, San Jose's got depth from so top to bottom. Depth, yeah. But I don't see how the old guard, the old leaders of that team can play the way they did against LA, against Detroit. And I really don't think they're going to bring it. I don't see it. Thornton is... San Jose beat a decimated LA team, a poor LA team. They just barely beat them, too. It's not like San Jose, you know, swept away LA in four games or anything. And to me, the series will be close, but I think ultimately Detroit's going to have more balanced scoring, more consistent scoring, and, yeah. and they'll get it
well,
done.
Well, let's look back at last night's first game, because really San Jose dominated. I mean, they dominated on the shots on goal. I mean, and not, you know, for Detroit.
Yeah, they were trailing for the most part all game.
Well, they were down 1-0. Yeah, I mean, I know that. But I mean, when it's 1-0, it's not that you have to shoot from everywhere. You're still trying. I mean, you still have enough confidence in your ability to get one goal. So it's not like you're down 3-0 and you're shooting from the blue line just to get it on net and hoping and praying for a rebound. But to outshoot, I mean, to outshoot a Detroit team 46-25.
And so you beat the M.A. again?
You know, to outshoot them in overtime San Jose. I know they had the power play, the 4-minute power play. But San Jose outshoots Detroit 7-1 in overtime?
Sam Cates just BBM me. We need to let him in the back.
You know, Drew, I want to talk about the series as a whole quickly.
Okay.
Okay, I mean, we'll factor in last night, obviously. Thornton and Marlowe were playing with Setoguchi yesterday, adding a speed element to it. I know Marlowe's a good skater. Thornton's not the best skater. It's going to be interesting to see the matchups as this series progresses, because yesterday Detroit had kind of had their combinations mixed up a bit. Not always the Rafalski Lidstrom that you're used to, or whatever it may be. But I think the Couture Heatley Klo line from last night, that's a line to me that's going to carry the play as much as the other line, if not more. You know, Couture's speed is going to be a big factor in this series for me, and that's why I think Setoguchi's playing the other two guys to open up the ice a little bit. Detroit's defense is a little bit of an older bunch. You know, Saleh and Lidstrom, even at this age, is not as fast as he once was. He makes more mistakes than he once did. So the combination that Detroit employed yesterday, I felt were interesting to offset a team that has three lines. Remember, when you're looking at the centers, and you're looking at Thornton and Couture and Pavelski, that's a three-headed monster there. Detroit's defense pairing, you know, sometimes you can load up Lidstrom, Rafalski, Stewart, Cronwall, and then have Eriksson and Saleh back if you're playing against a team that only has two lines of offense. It's not the case in this situation. They have three lines of offense. But I think when you delve deep into the issue, that presents an issue for Detroit. Conversely, I think the same issue is presented for San Jose. And a key to this series is not how Boyle and Murray play, because Boyle and Murray looked good yesterday. Boyle looked really good. You know, it's a speed and physical combination. When you look at the second pairing, it's how does Vlasic, who's a smooth skater, smart defenseman, and Demers, who's an offensive player, but has really played well in the playoffs, how does that combination, and then how do Ian White and Nicholas Vallin match up against Detroit's the second and third lines? Which, it's not... Another thing I think it needs to be pointed out is in reality, I know Detroit's first line is Datsyuk. San Jose's first line is different every night.
Sure. Well, which is a nice ability to have.
Right.
If your you know, supposed top line isn't performing, they have one line 1A and 1B.
Well, let's look at how Detroit was employing their lines yesterday, just for you know, just to give us a little telltale sign into what went on. You know, Lidstrom was playing with Stewart for the most part yesterday, which I noticed.
Yeah.
Cronwall with Saleh, Rafalski with Eriksson. Different combinations.
Yeah.
Okay. On offense, you were looking at, you know, Bertuzzi, Cleary, and Abdelkader. Philpola, Franzen, and Hudler, which would probably be your second line if you want scoring. And then Zetterberg, Datsyuk, and Holmstrom, and then Helm, Miller, and Eves. You know, dangerous combinations throughout. It's a deep team against a deep team. I think goaltending is a wash. In my opinion, goaltending is a wash.
Yeah.
So, you know, what does it come down to?
Well, it's also worth noting that on the coaching factor, you know, Todd McClellan is a disciple. Todd McClellan, San Jose's head coach, is a disciple of Mike Babcock.
Does that negate the coaching advantage?
Well, I don't think it negates it, because I think Mike Babcock is the best coach in hockey still.
I agree.
And he will exploit it to some point during the series. But that's not to say that McClellan probably knows him as well as anybody else does, which is an advantage. Which is an advantage, say that, you know.
In terms of special teams, Drew, I think that needs to be taken into account, because it's funny how these teams are similar in that respect. San Jose's power play was great this year. Detroit's penalty kill wasn't great. San Jose advantage. In terms of Detroit, Detroit's power play was great this year. San Jose's penalty kill wasn't great. Detroit advantage.
It's great.
You think about it that way. I mean, this series, to me, I have Detroit in 7, Drew. I'm going to come out with that.
Okay.
Because it's very much like Boston-Philly. It's completely even to me. I like Detroit a little bit better. In terms of defense, I think just a little bit in terms of their defense is a little bit better than San Jose's. But it's such a close call. I'm going with a team that had a lot of rest, a team that has something to get after San Jose after last year's embarrassment. But I think it's going to be a long, tough series. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's 3 or 4 overtimes in the series.
Let's be honest. Detroit was rusty. They had a lot of time off, you know, since the Phoenix series. That's why they didn't play that great last night. And there could be... You know, I'm going to go a bit of a bold prediction. I think this series is going to produce probably 3 or 4 overtimes.
I just said that.
Didn't Richard just say that?
Did you?
Were you BBMing while I was talking?
Sorry. When did you say that?
A second ago.
Okay, sorry. I wasn't BBMing.
It's true. He wasn't BBMing. That's the most concerning part, is that you were actually paying attention to him.
That is correct, Rupert.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I just said the series was going to possibly go to 3 to 4 overtimes, and then you said, I'm going to go on a limb and make a bold prediction that the series is going to go to 3 to 4 overtimes.
Did you eat a lot of paint chips when you were a kid?
Just like, I don't know, it's this daylight savings time that's really, really, really getting to me, guys.
Daylight
savings. Who do you got, Ezzy?
Did I take Detroit in 6 or 7?
You took the Wings in 7. Richie, you have the Wings in 7. I have the Wings in 5.
Ooh, wow.
That's a bold prediction.
That's a bold prediction.
After we broke down the series, you must be tripping out about that a bit.
I'm cool as a cucumber.
What did Remus have?
Remus had the Wings in 6, and Dave Manuka of IllegalCurve.com had the San Jose Sharks in 7.
I am surprised that everybody had the Wings.
Well, no, Dave had the Sharks in 7.
I'm saying it.
Everyone in the room?
4 to 5 had the Wings.
Well, I think there's something about, you know, the aura of the Wings and the expected letdown that San Jose is going to have in the playoffs.
Fair point, Drew.
I mean, you see it so many times, you have to wonder, you know, why should I bet any differently? Why should I bet any differently than how it's going to be?
And you know what, Drew? You are royal.
Yes.
And we should be listening to you, because you are the guy who's having the next royal wedding in a year from
just
now.
Do this.
And when you're on, Drew, you're on your throne and you're ready to finally walk down that aisle with the Princess of Kentucky, we'll be there to.
Cheer you up.
I'm wondering if you guys are going to actually be there. It's becoming.
I'm riding it on a horse.
You're riding. And isn't Ezzy jousting in the pre-show matchup?
I'll be the court jester outside trying to get into the royal wedding.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean is going to join us to break down Vancouver Nashville. You're listening to the Royal Winnipeg Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, 11 a.m., 1 hour to go. We're joined on the line now by Josh Cooper of the Tennessean. He's got a few minutes. He's on his way to the arena in Vancouver for the game day skate. Josh, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for joining us. We know that you're tight on time, so we'll try and keep it short and sweet with you. But appreciate it nonetheless.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Yeah. Josh, does the Predators' success in this series hinge on them outworking the Canucks in all aspects of the game, night in and night out?
I think so, just because you see the talent differential. I mean, Vancouver has so many guys that can score. They have the Sedins, Kessler, Burrows. They have so much talent, so much balance. And Nashville, their big sort of strength is the fact that they do try to outwork every team that they play. So, I think that's the big thing there, is just trying to outwork them, trying to play better defense, and to sort of hope that that's enough.
Josh, what adjustments do the Predators have to make to be more successful in Game 2?
They talked a lot about effort. They didn't get their best effort in Game 1, and they're hoping to get a little bit better in Game 2. I think that, sort of judging from what I've heard and what I've seen, is that you'll probably see the best effort that they can bring tonight. The question is whether that's enough to kind of overcome all of Vancouver's weapons.
Josh, a lot of the playoffs is about matchups, and we'll see it in every series about coaches trying to work certain matchups. It was especially prevalent in the Vancouver-Chicago series the previous round. What matchup do you think is going to be the most important in this series moving forward?
Goaltending matchup. Pecorino can beat Roberto Luongo. I think that's the big key is, if he can be better than him, and if Nashville's defense can kind of hold Vancouver's forwards in check. Those are sort of the two that I look at that are keys to Nashville pulling it out.
Do you see Barry Trotz trying to match up Weber and Suter against the Sedins as much as he can, or do you see him kind of matching them up with both the Sedin line and the Kessler line interchangeably?
I think it's kind of mix and match just because both those lines are so good that you can use your defensive pair, and he can play those guys about 30 minutes a game. He can use them against multiple lines, so I think it's just sort of which line is going better. Last game, really, no line was going very well for Vancouver. So he could sort of mix and match a little bit. But I think it just sort of depends on whether the Kessler line or the Sedin line is doing, showing a little more potency on the offensive end.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Josh Cooper from the Tennessean in Nashville on his way to the arena in Vancouver for the Canucks Predators pregame skate. Josh, this is the first time that the Predators have gotten out of the first round. They made it to the second round for the first time this year. Is there a worry in the organization that the team might experience some complacency and be the proverbial just happy to be there team?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this team just seems so different. I think a lot of that has to do with Shea Weber's leadership. With all due respect to Jason Arden and what he was able to accomplish here, Weber's much more even keel. He seems to really have a sense of what this team needs and kind of has that more of a winning attitude. So, I think that there's no complacency. They've been talking about winning the Stanley Cup since the first game of the season. And you sort of looked at them when they were saying that, and you're just kind of like, really? But no, they truly believe it. And they got through Anaheim in the first round, and they really think that they got a shot against Vancouver in the second round here.
Josh, our last question for you here is about Jordan Tootoo. He's from, here in Manitoba and Churchill. He's made a huge impact thus far in the playoffs. What does his career renaissance stem from?
Just finding peace, being in really good shape and sort of recognizing he had a problem. And getting that problem taken care of, and now you're seeing that he can be a game-changing player. And he's got speed, he's got a heavy shot, and he can do a lot of different things out there.
Does he seem to you, building on this last question, does he seem to you to be a completely, significantly different person than he was at even game one of this season?
I'm not really around him enough to really kind of say he's a different person, but you can tell he's really dedicated himself to the sport, and I think that kind of lends to sort of the decision he made and the fact that he really sort of cares about his team and himself now. And, he's turned the corner, I guess, as they normally say.
Always nice to see a guy, get his life back in order. Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No worries, anytime. Sorry about the time constraints.
No worries, yeah, Josh. Thanks for joining us. Away from hockey. I mean, hockey, it's a business and it's a game and everything else, but it really is nice to see a guy who's had demons seemingly overcome them the way that Jordan Tootoo has. And, I mean, the contributions he had in the first round of that series against Anaheim were invaluable for a Nashville team that's desperate to get scoring and everything from anybody.
Drew, it would be great, if we were ever lucky enough to get Jordan Tootoo on the show, that would be awesome, because I've always been a big fan of his. I remember watching him play in the MJHL. But his story is remarkable with what happened with his brother. If you don't have a chance, there's been a documentary made about Jordan Tootoo's life, and he struggled with substance abuse. And it's great that he voluntarily entered the substance abuse program. He saw that he was having trouble with his own life, said, "I've had enough of this." And it's great to see him. It is absolutely great to see him having the success. He's always had success in Nashville. He's been a fan favorite there for a very long time now, Drew.
He plays a fan-friendly style. He's always...
He's a fighter. He's tough. But it's nice to see him, chip in some goals and points in the playoffs and get them to the second round. It's really one of the best feel-good stories about the first round, in my opinion.
Yeah, he has a couple of beautiful passes in that first round that led to key goals for Nashville. And, building on the Tootoo, that idea of Tootoo being an offensive producer for the Predators really need all players like Jarrett Spaulding, like Jordan Tootoo, and like some of their bottom, six players.
Spaulding.
Nick Spaulding.
Smithson.
Jarrett Smithson, that's right. Sorry, there you go. To contribute, all three of those guys, that line, and on all three of those guys, I mean, they're not playing guys like Colin Wilson. They're playing more their muckers and their guys that they trust defensively, I guess. And they need contributions from all of them to be able to have a chance against Vancouver.
Just a quick side note. In Quebec, they call Jordan Tutu Jordan Duda.
That's terrible.
Is he?
God almighty.
That's a John Ginsberg original right there, Drew, so...
That's an awful joke.
Do we have the Royal music again?
No.
Are you saying my dad's not funny, Drew?
No, I'm saying that if John told it, I'm sure he would have had better delivery. It's all about the
true.
Delivery.
It is. Comedy is all about the delivery.
Yeah, that was all. I apologize on behalf of our listeners. I apologize for that terrible attempt at humor. I mean, they'd rather hear you sing again than to tell
Drew,
jokes
you're
that
getting,
bad.
Drew, you're getting close to needing to apologize to Ezra tomorrow.
Well,
next
hour, they have just be the Legal Curve apology show. Let's go take a quick break. Let's go to break. We have an open segment here. We'll take your calls, your tweets, whatever you want to talk about. Still to come, we have Rick Peckham of the Tampa Bay Lightning play-by-play voice and Randy Hahn from the San Jose Sharks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We just heard from Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean. He's in Vancouver on his way to the arena for Game 2 of the Canucks Predator Series. Game you can hear live on Sports Radio 1290. Pre-game show starts at 7 o'clock. Puck drop at 8 tonight.
We were hanging with Mr. Cooper, Drew.
Oh, I like it. That's
good. Not bad. That's a little bit better than your duh-duh joke.
What was the theme music for that show?
Hanging with Mr. Cooper?
Yeah.
I know that you can get that show on DVD now. If we can get that up, that would be... awesome.
Get what up?
Now, what's her name? Rick Fox's ex-wife was Vanessa Williams, right? She was in that show.
Was she in that show?
I think so.
Okay. Mm,
she was the wife
or girlfriend. Was he a basketball star?
Yeah.
Became a
retired basketball teacher. I think he was a gym teacher.
Remus? Right. Remus, you got the mic on?
He's got nothing.
You got nervous there?
Yeah, nothing. Stage fright,
little social anxiety.
You can tweet us at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. You can join the live chat at www.illegalcurve.com. And you can always subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Get the show sent directly to your iPod each and every Sunday or Saturday afternoon.
What about your iRiver?
I don't know if you can send an iTunes show directly to an iRiver. I doubt it, though.
Are we going to talk about the awards again?
Yeah,
are we going to get back to the awards?
Get back to it. We haven't even started on it.
Yeah, what were we talking about? I said that I thought Carey Price should have been nominated for the best.
Oh, that's true. You did.
I have my own little sub-show going on, Drew.
Let's start with the Hart Trophy nominations for the NHL awards that came out earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Sedin, nominated from the Vancouver Canucks, to nobody's surprise. Corey Perry of the Anaheim Ducks, also really to nobody's surprise. And then it was that third slot that nobody was quite sure who was going to get in there, and it's ended up being Martin St. Louis of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think it's a two-horse race between Sedin and Perry. How do you guys see it? Do you agree with the three people who are nominated?
No issue with three people. Absolutely no issue with three people.
Richie, I think it's a three-horse race. I really don't see one clear-cut favorite here. I think the edge in the second half is clearly Perry. From a standpoint of the entire year, yeah, Sedin and St. Louis, there's a two-horse race. But I'm going to be honest. I'm glad I don't get a vote. Hopefully they never give me a vote, by the way. But because I would probably vote for someone who wasn't nominated and spoil the ballot. But I really don't know. I'm kind of torn here. My heart wants to go to Corey Perry. But I'd like to see Carey Price in there.
So
he's not.
I
would have given it if
Price over St. Louis with a
Price over all of them because of the fact that he was playing with a defense that was missing two of the top guys. But I think obviously we have to pick out of the three guys. If I have to make a choice, I'd go St. Louis, I guess.
Richard, what are your thoughts on that?
I would say Corey Perry, Drew, and I think. One of the main reasons for that is the amount of goals that he scored. I know 50 goals in this day and age is just, you know, it's very, 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 very hard to accomplish. And I think, you know, the Sedins, they play with each other, and obviously Perry plays with Getzlaff and Ryan. Now, he didn't have Getzlaff for that whole period of time. Sedins were all there through this season. And I think that Daniel plays with Henrik. They're great together. But they also get a lot of that ice time in terms of, you know, if you look at the zone start stat, which we haven't talked about much on the show, but we have with Gabe before, and that's that he starts a ton of plays in his offensive zone. And he gets, you know, Vancouver was doing was giving Manny Mahotra all the hard defensive faceoffs, Kessler a bit, and then using the Sedins in the offensive zone, and they get a bit of an advantage there. I think that what Perry did this season was more incredible for me than was what Sedin did. Not to take away credit from Daniel Sedin at all, but I just think that Corey Perry was a dominant force, and he took a team that wasn't as well-rounded. It's not a one-man game, but it was a team that wasn't as well-rounded as Vancouver was, not a well-oiled machine, no guarantee for the playoffs, and the way he played, we were watching him just dominate games, you know, and I think that just what he did in taking that team to the fourth seed in the playoffs, guys, remember, the fourth seed.
Yeah, they were the favorite in the first round,
so,
or they had the home ice advantage.
For a team that didn't have much on defense before and lost Jonas Hiller, to be able to withstand all of that adversity, and the Canucks had no adversity this year, let's be real here. To me, that would go to Corey Perry.
I don't know if you guys saw Adam Proto's tweet this week. We've had him on. We were lucky to have him on.
Adam Proto of the Hockey News, yeah.
Yeah, we've had him on a couple times. He tweeted that should the Hart Trophy... I thought this was interesting because to me, that's what I always think of Richie when I think of the Hart Trophy. He said, should the Hart Trophy go to the best player, straight-up best player, or the player that's the most valuable to the team?
Well,
I think the best player is Corey... Corey Perry's all has without Crosby there, you can make the argument that he is the best player in the league now. Better than Ovechkin.
It's the debate.
Better than Stamkos.
It's the debate between MVP, most valuable player, and most outstanding player.
And I think, got in before you finish that point. Daniel Sedin had a 74.5% zone start in the offensive zone. Corey Perry was 48.6. Now I know there's not a real context there. We haven't explained that enough. But just put it to you this way: between offensive and defensive draws, Daniel Sedin was essentially 3-1.
In 3-1 in the offensive zone to start his shift, you mean?
Exactly. And Corey Perry was below 50%.
The way I look at it, too, as far as, you know, going back to best player versus most valuable to the team, I think if you look at it like, take one guy out of the lineup and which team has hurt the most, I think Sedin drops off there. Then it becomes St. Louis versus Perry. Because I think if Sedin isn't there, well, you got his brother, you got Kessler, you got Burrows. I think it's in between Perry and St. Louis, and when you that's basically between my choice and Richie's choice, and it's very close because St. Louis brings goal scoring, but he brings playmaking. Perry brings the best, arguably one of the best pure goal scorers in the game, in the world. And so if you take him off, yeah, you've got Getzlaff, but does Getzlaff go without Perry? Whereas Ryan definitely doesn't go without one of those two guys, either of those two guys. But I think when it becomes, which guy do you take off the team, and then all of a sudden the team is not the same team? And I think, you know, when Richie picks Corey Perry, it would be tough to say that because, you know, he was absolutely on fire every game, night in and night out.
Think about this, Ezzy. You think about Perry plays with Getzlaff and Ryan. Sedin plays with his brother. St. Louis plays with Stamkos. Sidney Crosby, before he got injured, was playing with nobody.
Dupuis and Talbot.
The truth is, if Crosby doesn't get injured,
it's not even
a discussion. And there's some people who think that he should have still been nominated, even though he played half the season.
Back to hanging with Mr. Cooper. It was Holly Robinson Pete. That's Rodney Pete's wife. Was the wife and Mark Mark Curry was Mark Cooper, and he was a retired basketball star with the Golden State Warriors.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Thanks to Richard Tapper, by the way, texted that in, too.
Oh, that was nice. Richard Tapper.
Confirmed on Wikipedia.
Host of On the Sidelines here on Sports Radio 1290.
Anyways, let's go to the other one.
This is a very interesting one. I thought that it says a lot about the way they are as players. That's the Frank Selke Trophy given to the best defensive forward each and every year. The guys who are nominated for this trophy are guys who just as easily and have enough skill to be nominated for the Hart Trophy. And that's Pavel Datsyuk of the Red Wings, Ryan Kessler of the Canucks, and Jonathan Toews of the Chicago Blackhawks. Very interesting for, you know, if you're a young hockey player out there and you're listening to this program, that the three of the, I mean, you'd probably say those are three of the top 10 NHLers right now. You know, more or less, pretty close. The fact that those three are also nominated for defensive responsibility in your own zone, that should say a lot to the young up-and-comer youth in the hockey world right now.
How many Selkies has Datsyuk won? Four? Five?
Let me check on that right now.
I think this is...
He's won it 3 years in a row. He's trying for the four-peat right now.
I think Kessler gets it this year. I think he should. I'm going to go with Kessler. I think he's taken his game to a different level as far as goal scoring and being kind of the jack of all trades this year. I really think that as far as I'm concerned, if I want a guy out there to shut someone else down, it's Ryan Kessler for me.
Richard?
This is I don't know how you don't give it to Datsyuk again.
Well, you do.
Couldn't you give Datsyuk almost every...
If you give it to Kessler.
I just gave it to Kessler. I never liked the rationale of, you know, he's won so many years in a row to give it to somebody different. Well,
no,
you know,
should go to the best guy.
He's deserving of the award.
Yeah, he's deserving of the award.
I mean, Kessler's played against tough, you know, tough competition. Datsyuk's played against the toughest competition on the other team. He is still the best. I know Kessler scored 41 goals, and give him credit for that. But Datsyuk's still, to me, the best player on the best player offensively. And then you talk about playing against the other team's best players. If you watch him on a night-in, night-out basis defensively, I find him to be a better player. And we're talking about not just watching the games, too. He's in your face. His back-checking ability is amazing. His ability to pickpocket is amazing. To me, he's a Selke Trophy winner. And with all due respect to two tremendous players in Kessler and Taves, I don't think there should be any reason why Datsyuk doesn't forfeit.
Is Datsyuk the second best player in the NHL?
You could make that argument behind Crosby and the way Ovechkin has kind of lacked in progression here. You could absolutely make that argument.
When you watch, like, I mean, you watch Datsyuk in that first round against Phoenix. You can't take your eyes off him when he's on the ice.
Too.
You watch him yesterday, exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. I mean, against stiffer competition in San Jose as opposed to how Phoenix was.
Remember, no Zetterberg in the first round
that's
either.
Right. Yeah. Datsyuk is, I mean, you know, he's a magician. It's really the only word you can use. You see him on the ice, and the things he does with the puck and the vision he has and the skill set he has is unbelievable. Yeah. It's fascinating to appreciate.
Aside from Crosby, who's in another world before the concussion, was in another world.
Yeah. He actually might be in another world right now, but that's a concussion-related issue.
That's troublesome, by the way.
Very, that he had a setback. That's unbelievably troublesome.
And then he's where they might not be ready for next season.
They should rename the Selke the Guy Carboneau Trophy.
Bob Gainey is. Not Guy Carboneau.
Yeah, it's Bob
Gainey. I like your idea there, but they're not going to change these trophy names.
Well, but Frank Selke was a guy. I mean, nobody thinks that he was a guy, but he was a guy that... So they... I don't like...
You got a guy?
I don't have a guy, but I don't like necessarily the idea of changing a trophy's name.
Yeah, neither do I.
Because, you know, it was an honor of Frank Selke. Why aren't we honoring him anymore?
Yeah.
Well, your history's expired. What? No.
No.
Next award?
Next award, Jack Adams. We're not going to get to all the awards today.
Grizzly Adams did have a beard.
Yeah. Jack Adams' finalists this year were Alain Vigneault of Vancouver, Dan Bylsma of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Barry Trotz of the Nashville Predators.
Boucher has to be there, Drew.
What
did he accomplish? How did they not pick him?
I agree with Ezzy here.
He should have won the trophy, let alone
interesting
nominated
thing with Nashville
him.
Is, you know, what's really changed from seasons past. Now, again, though, that's the rationale that why, you know, if Trotz does an amazing job every year, why should you...
Yeah, why should it be punished?
So I like Trotz's nomination. Now, this is what you're getting to. You're getting to the idea of in terms of the coaching Jack Adams. Is it the team that is the most surprising to you, or is it the team that does the most? You know, Vigneault, with the most pressure, took his team, and they were absolutely dominant. But they were supposed to be dominant.
But they have the most talent, also.
But they were supposed to be dominant. So I had to take one guy out of there.
Yeah.
Although I like the way Vigneault coached that team.
Yeah.
So Vigneault, Trotz, and who's the other one? Drew, if we get
Bylsma.
And Bylsma, considering what he did without Crosby and Malkin,
yep.
You know, I think Boucher should be in there, but it would be a four.
You got to take out Vigneault, though.
But do you? I think the way he coached that team this year, I think he had them in control all the time. I think they were prepared. I think he played Schneider the right amount of games. I think he employed his players in the right situations. I do agree with your Boucher comment, though.
This is also something, I know this is going to open up a huge discussion and we don't have time because we have two guests coming up. Why don't these awards factor in the playoffs? Every time I think about this, I think of, like, right now we're in the second round of the playoffs.
Small amount of time, though, Ezzy. What you're doing is if you have a team...
You're discounting the regular season once you do that.
Not only that, Drew, but the team that's just not very good and has a player who can't make it to the playoffs, he's getting hurt by that.
If you factor...
Not even playing field.
If Chicago had beaten Vancouver in Game 7... And if you factor in the playoffs when you're deciding on who's nominated
for
awards, Vigneault is not nominated anymore.
Very true.
So I think it's a regular season award. It's a regular season award. That's all it is. There's usual playoff awards, but there's a regular season award.
Okay, so we got
fair enough.
Well, we got Rick Peckham after the break.
Right.
Remus has done a good job though.
Yeah, we have awesome audio of Rick Peckham. So get you a little bit excited for the interview. Rick Peckham, this is his call on the Sean Bergenheim winner in overtime in the Pittsburgh Tampa Bay series.
No, that's not it at all. It's not the winner, no, sorry. I could only get the ones from Game 4.
Oh, Remus, you're fired.
Yeah, it was the Sean Bergenheim game-tying goal that was the game that James Neal scored the winner in.
There we go.
Okay,
let's hear it.
Let's hear the call so you can get a little excited for Rick Peckham coming up after the commercial messages. Let's go, Reem.
Kabina. Wrists it, deflected, save Fleury, scramble on, this guy, Bergenheim picks it up and scores! Off the scramble in front, the Lightning have tied the game at two.
I always wondered what my call would be if you ever got into the opportunity. You know, you guys, you ever go to the Hockey Hall of Fame where they have the booth where sure. you can make the call of the game winner?
I've done that.
Yeah, so have I. I always wondered, you know.
It's a lot harder.
You know, hold on, I did that, and I have it on my YouTube, actually. It's hilarious.
You have a YouTube?
Can we pull that up for, I don't have any time.
No, we don't have any time. Let's go to break. We got Rick Peckham coming up. Maybe next week we'll hear Michael Remus's play-by-play call. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Coming up, Rick Peckham from the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's great to be with you.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate you joining us. Rick, let's start off with a health update on Simone Gagné and Pavel Kubina after last night's Game 1 in Washington.
Well, they're going to be examined again today, so there's really no update at this point. It was really a scary situation with both, I think more so with Gagné. His replay showed his head bouncing off the ice and a very dangerous situation given his concussion history. So I think the Lightning just kind of hope for the best, and we'll see what develops. And as we've seen with a high-profile player like Sidney Crosby, you just can't sit there and predict what the outcome of this is going to be, and we'll just kind of wait and see.
Rick, after the first round series against the Penguins, you know, and looking back at last night's game, did you see, you know, maybe the Bolts looking around and saying to themselves, wow, there's a lot more ice for us to move around than there was against Pittsburgh?
Well, I don't know. It's the way they started the game, they started extremely well. I think they really carried the game to the Capitals the first 5 minutes or so, and then things kind of slowed down a little bit. I think that giveaway by Clark that ended up in the Semin goal put them back on their heels a little bit. I think that overall they went a stretch of 10 minutes without a shot on goal. And so at times I think they found things as smothering as the Penguins were playing them, but other times it seemed like the Capitals got out of their tighter system and started to play a little bit like the old Caps team would do and try to trade chance for chance with teams. And that gave the Lightning a bit of an opening there.
Rick, there was a lot of line matching in the first round series between Dan Bylsma and Guy Boucher. Do you expect to see that continue at the same rate in the series between Bruce Boudreau and Guy Boucher?
I think so. I think that Boudreau is going to use Carl Alsner and John Carlson, the very talented young defensive duo. He's used them in matchup situations throughout the second half of the season as their system has evolved into, you know, more of a defensive-oriented type of thing. And I noticed him out against those guys out against Stamkos quite a bit. Boucher, though, has been able to fight off the matchups pretty well. I think with Bylsma, he was able to move guys around a little bit. I think his flexibility diminishes a bit with the injury to Gagné. I think that really gave him some great flexibility in terms of constructing his lines, so it'll be interesting to see what he does there. And in the past, I know Mike Lundin has had a pretty good time trying to at least contain Alex Ovechkin. It's very difficult to do, but Lundin's such a very good positional player, and he's good defending with a stick that he really eliminates time and space in Ovechkin. And they were out against each other on a number of shifts last night, so I think that might be a way that he can go. I think he used Brewer and Olin as his matchup pair in the Penguin series, but you've got to have a more mobile guy against Ovechkin, and Lundin fits that bill.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Rick Peckham, the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Rick, a lot has been made about the Lightning penalty kill success, 39 out of 40 in killing off penalties through 8 games in the postseason. They finished 8th in the regular season in the penalty kill. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the influence that assistant coach Wayne Fleming has on the Lightning's penalty kill success?
Well, they were pretty much top 10 throughout the season. There was a little lull, I think, when the team was sagging in general. in late February, early March, where it dropped out of the top 10 in terms of the regular season penalty-killing rankings. They've been solid all season. And I think what Wayne has stressed is being a little more aggressive than they have in the past in certain areas. They might even overload one side, which is a bit of a gamble in terms of killing a penalty, but they really want to pressure. And I think that was the key to their success. I think what you're seeing now is a combination of them executing, really paying attention to it. Wayne obviously is not with the team. He's battling a brain tumor right now, but I think it's brought extra focus to that unit, and they're really playing for the guy who's given them that leadership on the bench all season long, and it's something that I think they're taking particular pride in and paying particular attention to honor what Wayne has been able to do for them most of the season.
We obviously wish Wayne the best and hopefully pass along that message, Rick. In terms of the Lightning defense, and we had you on a few weeks ago talking about that, and you spoke about Mike Lundin. Can you speak a bit about Eric Brewer's acquisition and just the steadying effect he's had on the defense, you know, playing in all situations and playing significant minutes in those situations?
Well, you guys know in watching him through the years with mostly St. Louis and also up there in Edmonton in Western Canada, you know, he's not a guy who's going to bring you out of your seat. He's a guy that you need to watch night in, night out to really gain an appreciation of him. And I think he has brought that very calming, steady, strong, sturdy presence to this team that they didn't have in many situations. Boucher has said at the start of the playoffs, I really don't want to put him on the power play, but he never panics with a puck. He's always making good decisions. We need that with our power play. He felt that Brewer plays so much in other situations, he didn't want to add an additional burden to him. But, you know, he's been very solid. The play he made on the Stamkos goal last night, I mean, he very calmly waits for his opportunity to make a play. He doesn't hurry and fling the puck around, and that's been a problem for this team with all the shorthanded goals they've given up through the regular season. He's been a tremendous addition in many areas for this team.
Rick, as it stands right now, Steve Downey's actually leading the Lightning in points. Is this just an example of how effective Steve Downey can be when he keeps his emotions in check?
I think so. The penalty he got last night for elbowing I thought was questionable, but I don't think he's ever going to get a break from the official.
Yep.
So he's always got to battle that, but I think he's finally over losing control and things like that. You'll see him battling nose-to-nose with Capitals players last night, but he does so under control, and he does so to get under their skin. And he's always had a very good amount of skill, particularly as a passer, and we saw him dogging the puck, and I thought he was the player of the game last night for Tampa Bay. I mean, not only is he piled up points here in the last three games, the final two of the Penguin series and last night, and scoring a critical goal, but it's just making very strong plays at times where the team had kind of backed off. It was on its heels, and he, along with his line mates, Dominic Moore and Sean Bergenheim, I thought really got the team back on the beam and on the aggressive path once again, and he's just playing tremendous right now.
Last question for you, Rick. You can't talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning and the success they've had in the playoffs and in the regular season without talking about the acquisition of Dwayne Rolison. 41 years old, he keeps getting stronger and stronger. Just how amazing of a story is it?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I'm watching the national coverage here in the United States on Versus. They've had the exclusive rights to the game last night and the game Sunday, and naturally it's a huge topic. Everybody brings it up, but I can tell you from dealing day-to-day with the team, I don't talk a lot to Dwayne, but you see how people interact with him. You're around him every day, and you talk to him on occasion. The last thing that pops into my head is that this guy is 41 years old. You think about it, and you think, he's 33. He really does not resemble a 41-year-old in any way, shape, or form. I think it's a tribute to his attitude, as he says, age is just a number, but it's also his commitment to working off the ice and the tremendous conditioning that he keeps himself in and his unwavering focus, which I think has been very important. As far as his play, you can see his reactions are just as quick as any goaltender out there, but I think what set him apart quite a bit in the playoffs thus far is the fact that he has controlled just about every rebound. He's seeing every puck He's, you know, Fleury really had problems in the first round controlling rebounds. That was never an issue with Rolison, and he's continuing to play along those lines and really feeding to the confidence of this team.
Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy Game 2 in Washington.
Thank you. My pleasure, guys.
Take care, Rick. Thanks very much.
Yep.
Thanks, Rick. You know, Rick's been doing that for a long time. Him and Bobby Taylor do the Lightning games. He does versus games as well.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
And the Tampa Bay Lightning are an intriguing team, and they're going to be an intriguing team moving forward.
Well, it'll be an interesting series here.
Quick aside, let's go to an early break because we want to get Randy and we want to do Cheers and Jeers.
Right.
For the book, for the Hockey Prospectus book, you know, this year we have more guys on staff, and so I kind of got to pick which teams in the
Southeast. Are you the owner now?
No, which teams in the Southeast Division I could cover.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay was my number one selection because of so many things they're doing or forward-thinking, and to me, they're the model moving forward. Stevie Yzerman, Guy Boucher, and the people involved there.
It's amazing how just an ownership change and a front office change has turned around the fortunes of that entire franchise.
You talk about the top down, maybe the model example of that is the Detroit Red Wings, the Pittsburgh Steelers in football.
Yeah.
Many of the most successful organizations are from the top down, and when you don't have leadership at the top, that's one thing that, just leading into break, that's one thing that bodes well for Winnipeg, because there's great leadership at the top.
Very good point. Let's go to break. When we come back, Randy Hahn of the San Jose Sharks.
Play-by-play.
Play-by-play guy for the San Jose Sharks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to one final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We've been joined previously by Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. We were joined by Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean. We're working hard to get Randy Hahn from the San Jose Sharks from Comcast Sportsnet in the Bay Area. He's the play-by-play voice for the Sharks. We're working hard to get him on. We'll do our best in the next 15 minutes, hopefully get him on. In the interim, why don't we continue talking about some of the awards that the NHL nominated and handed out, or the nominees were announced earlier this week. What about the Vezina Award? Three goalies still alive in the playoffs. That's Tim Thomas of the Boston Bruins, Pekka Rinne of the Nashville Predators, and Roberto Luongo of the Vancouver Canucks.
Why isn't Carey Price there again? Why wasn't he nominated for either of those trophies, Vezina and Hart?
Yeah, I agree with Izzy. I thought Price should have been in there, probably at the expense of Luongo.
I didn't think Luongo was that great.
I like Luongo. I think Luongo's a very good goaltender. But, you know, Thomas is this ridiculous save percentage to a, you know, and unbelievable. Now, I know Boston overcounts shots a bit, but Thomas will probably win the award, I'd say. I think it'll probably go Thomas 1, Rene 2, 3, Luongo.
I mean, I think Thomas should win, given that when you set the record for save percentage in a season, you should probably get to win that award. Seems pretty straightforward, but it's true.
He probably will.
I don't understand why Carey Price has been overlooked.
That's a good question, Drew, and I don't know the answer to that either.
You know, that just seemed a little bit odd to me as far as I'm concerned. Let's see. Now, for rookies. Rookies was an interesting one in that there was just a ton of rookies who were...
It's actually probably the most interesting race.
Yeah, I'm just trying to pull it up here real quick, if you know them all.
Jeff Skinner, Michael Grabner, and Logan Couture were the three nominees.
That's right. Okay, so Jeff Skinner, a high draft pick of the Carolina Hurricanes, a guy a lot of people thought they reached for.
Yep.
You know, you have Michael Grabner, who was a waiver wire cast-off.
It's amazing the Florida waived him.
And he turned around in New York.
Vancouver would do that deal over again. I thought it was a good deal with them, but they would do it over again.
Yeah, and you have Logan Couture.
First-round pick and Michael Grabner in their lineup. You know, having a first-round pick right now for them and Michael Grabner for a defenseman who they've been healthy scratching for a couple games in the playoffs. Yeah.
Played well, though, I thought, in Game 1.
I like Keith Ballard. I do.
I almost said
Harold Ballard.
Yeah.
I like Keith Ballard, but...
Nobody likes Harold Ballard.
something that they would...
I don't understand why they were healthy scratching him, though. Did he look that off to you
He didn't look great, but I didn't think that any of the options they put in place were any better than him at all.
You know,
Alberts, are you kidding me?
Yeah,
Aaron Rome,
exactly.
Me?
So. Keith Ballard's an NHLer.
Yeah.
Not sure about the other two guys, if they're just sort of...
Well, he's more than a sixth defenseman, Drew, so that's all.
So, Richie, who are you going with for the Calder?
I think he has to go to Grabner, has he?
Ooh, really?
Yeah, I do. I think he has to go to Grabner. I think he had an incredible season.
Richie, sorry to cut you off. I think we got Randy Hahn.
Yeah, Randy Hahn. Let's go to Randy Hahn. We have him on the line now. Randy, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hello.
How are you doing? There you go, Randy. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Sure.
Randy, first let's start with last night in San Jose. Who is Ben Ferrero, and besides the overtime hero, what role does he usually play for the Sharks?
Well, first of all, it's Ben Ferrio.
Pardon me. There you go. So we're off to a good start, you can see.
No, that's okay. He gets that a lot because of the spelling of his name.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy that over the last couple of years has spent most of the year in Worcester in the American Hockey League for the Sharks. And, you know, he's played a fairly prominent role there, but in San Jose he just hasn't had the opportunity to flourish on what's a pretty, you know, I think you'd argue, pretty a deep lineup, originally signed by the Sharks as a free agent. So he was undrafted out of Boston College, American kid out of Boston, and not that big, 5'11", 195, but he's really smart with the puck and just got an opportunity to play last night. It was kind of a shock to all of us that he was going to play because it didn't look that way in the morning skate. Todd McClellan had a fourth line in the first round against L.A. It started out as Ben Eager on the left wing, Scott Nickel at center, and then Jamal Mears on the right wing. And then partway through the series, he took Ben Eager out and put Jamie McGinn on the left wing. And I don't know if you remember game 6 against L.A., but McGinn took the 5-minute major late in regulation, and the Sharks ended up killing that, and then Thornton won the series in overtime. So for game 1, we're thinking, well, maybe Eager goes back on the left, or maybe McGinn stays in. We weren't sure. Well, it turned out Eager went back in, but it was the right wing side that Todd McClellan changed up, and he stuck Ben Ferrio in there. And lo and behold, he becomes the first player in NHL history to score an overtime goal in the playoffs on his birthday.
Wow. There's a stat of the day for you. Thanks there,
that's,
Randy.
That's
appreciate
good.
That.
That's
and what makes it even crazier, it was also Mike Babcock's birthday.
Ah,
there you go.
Not such a happy birthday for Babcock.
That was not a great ending to Babcock's birthday. Randy, last night, I mean, the Sharks obviously won in overtime, but they dominated on the shot clock. Why did you think that was?
Well, I they were the better team last night. They controlled most of the game, and I guess there's playoff rust. You know, I think that was one of the fears for the Red Wings. When you have 8 days off between games after sweeping Phoenix, you can practice, but you just can't keep that playoff tempo. And the Sharks went through a pretty tough series against L.A., went to 6 games, and they wrapped that up on Monday. So they probably had the perfect amount of time off. You know, 3 days off, one whole day off skates, and then a couple of days of practice, and then boom, you get right back at it again in game one of the second round on Friday. And that seemed like just the perfect window for them. They kind of got their energy back, but they didn't lose their mojo. And the Red Wings seemed like they just lost the tempo that you have in a playoff series. So I would fully expect the Red Wings will get that back, and you're going to see a much more even series.
Randy, have you noticed any change in Joe Thornton's game these playoffs as opposed to in years past?
Well, it's not just the playoffs. It was the whole year. If you look at Joe's stats, his numbers changed quite a bit. You know, he went from being a 100-point player to a 70-point player, but he also, you know, became a player that maybe cheated defensively a little bit, spent a lot more time behind the opponent's net trying to make plays, and this year he led the NHL in takeaways. So he became a much different kind of player, a better three-zone player. And, you know, if you look at some of these center icemen who endeavor to win championships, at some point in their careers they change their games, and guys like Joe Nieuwendyk come to mind, Steve Yzerman. They sacrifice some of the big numbers for the hard work, and that's what Joe did in the regular season, and it's translated into the playoffs. And you know the old adage the coaches always tell you, if you work hard defensively, you'll get the chances offensively. And sure enough, Thornton's had a good offensive start to these playoffs. The game-winning goal, the series-winning goal against L.A., he scored earlier in that series as well. And last year, certainly against the Red Wings, he was the Sharks' top player in that second-round series when San Jose won in 5. So, and I think picked up another point last night. So he's off to a good start in these playoffs, but obviously still a long way to go.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Randy Hahn, play-by-play voice of the San Jose Sharks on Comcast Sportsnet in the Bay Area.
Randy, how mature beyond his years is Logan Couture? And it just seems like he already has an all-around game that is, you know, something that usually 27, 28-year-olds don't have.
Yeah, he really is mature beyond his years. He just turned 22. And I think the time spent in development was key. You know, he wasn't one of those first-round draft picks that the Sharks rushed to the NHL or they felt they had to get him here right away. And again, that, you know, it speaks to the depth the Sharks have had offensively, you know, pretty much a perennial playoff team for the last 7 years. You know, it's been tough to crack their lineup if you're a center iceman when you're playing behind guys like Joe Thornton and Marleau when he was playing at center and Joe Pavelski. There's just not a lot of opportunities unless you're going to be a fourth liner, and obviously Logan Couture is not a fourth liner. He's really developed well, spent some time in Worcester and honed his game there, and then joined the Sharks last year partway through and ended up playing right on the button 25 games, so that kept him eligible for the Calder this year. And then he also got that valuable experience in the playoffs last year playing in all three series against Colorado, Detroit, and Chicago. So he brought that to the table this year. And then this season he really flourished, especially playing with Ryan Clough. They really developed a chemistry early in the year. And, you know, obviously he's been an important guy now playing on that second line with those two and Heatley. And that's allowed the Sharks to become a deeper team because now you can play Pavelski on your third line. And that's a real luxury that most teams in the league don't have.
Dan Boyle is definitely playing at his usual high standard. But can you comment on the maturation and development happening with Jason Demers and Mark-Edward Vlasic?
Yeah, those two have really done very well this year. Neither started the year very well, especially Vlasic. And I think the problem with Vlasic is he was kind of caught in that land between the junior career he had in the queue. He had 70 points the year they won the Memorial Cup. And I think that when he came to the NHL, there were a lot of expectations by him and maybe by fans as well, that this was going to be a big point-producing defenseman. And when he played alongside Rob Blake for 2 years, he got his points. But if you go back and track where Vlasic was getting those points, a lot of them was the secondary assists on goals in which Blake got the primary assist. So, you know, you're playing with Rob Blake, you pass D to D, Blake takes a shot, Sharks score on the rebound, Vlasic gets a point, but it's not the same as generating that chance with the pass yourself. And I think that he found out that at the NHL level, he wasn't going to be a big point producer. He had to buy into that. He had to buy into being a shutdown defenseman, and he did that this year. It came partway through this year, and then once he did that, and once he trusted that, then the points started to come again, relating to my prior point, but he's already become one of the Sharks' key shutdown defensemen in that regard. And Jason Demers kind of is flourishing on the other end. He brings a little bit more of an offensive upside, and he's had a strong development in the second half of this season as well. And it's funny how improvement by young players also correlates to success of the team, because in the first half of this year, the Sharks weren't playing very well. They were making adjustments primarily to a new goaltender and some other new personnel as well. And from January on, they started to click as a group, and that includes those young players. And Demers has certainly been a beneficiary of that overall team success, and his game has grown as well.
Randy, we'll let you go on this last question. Sharks head coach Todd McClellan is a former assistant under Detroit's Mike Babcock. Do you think this provides McClellan with any special insight into what the Red Wings are going to do, or do both coaches know each other so well that any advantage is just canceled out?
Well, it might be canceled out. There's so few secrets in the NHL, even between coaching staffs that don't have the kind of relationship that McClellan has, having been an assistant in Detroit. But he certainly has a window into the way they think as an organization, from Ken Holland, their general manager, on down, the kind of players that they seek, the way they like to play the game. And obviously the Sharks, when they hired Todd McClellan, were looking to mimic that. They saw the success the Red Wings have had over the last 20 years, making the playoffs every season and the Stanley Cups that have followed. And it's a pretty good template. It's a pretty good model. And I don't think there's any secret that when the Sharks went out and got Todd McClellan, they hoped to tap into that mindset and bring it to San Jose. And I think that's been successful to a large degree. If you watch that game last night, there are two teams that, while they possess different skill in certain players, I don't know if anybody can match up with Pavel Datsyuk, who in my view is the best player in the NHL. But they play the same way. They're a puck possession team, and they like to hold the puck. and are very skillful with it. And I think both teams are that way. And that's what makes this series so interesting. And there's an interesting kind of contrast because they're both so similar.
Randy Hahn, play-by-play voice of the San Jose Sharks, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Randy. Thanks very much. Right up against the time-wise this morning, no time for cheers and jeers, unfortunately, but on our behalf, I think everybody's behalf, congratulations go out to the Winnipeg Thrashers for winning out in the East Coast.
They won the TELUS Cup.
So, hearty congratulations.
Four cheers for the Thrashers.
That's right. Five cheers with Tim. That's right. Five cheers for the Winnipeg Thrashers. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thank you to Rick Peckham of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Randy Hahn of the San Jose Sharks.
Time to get an omelet, Drew.
A big thank you to Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean. We remind you to check out Illegal Curve on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. The podcast of the show will be available on iTunes. Subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Reminder, Game 2, Canucks Predators, live on Sports Radio 1290. Pregame show, 7 o'clock tonight. Puck drop at 8 p.m. Until next Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we wish you a good afternoon and good luck.
Sports Radio 1290, CFRW, Winnipeg.
Yeah! Time to get a lift.
A division of Bell Media.